therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Problems, problems, problems all day long. Will my problems work out right or wrong? My baby don't like anything I do. My teacher seems to feel the same way too.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is a Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. If you want to call into today's show, it's 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And today's a Monday. Excuse me. And we usually do politics on a Tuesday, but I have a very special guest today, so we're having politics tomorrow, too. Don't worry. But today we have Congressman Nick Begich. How you doing, sir?
I'm great, sir. How are you doing?
NB3, I'm doing great. I've been waiting to say that on the air for a while. How you been doing it down in the state U.S. Capitol?
Yes. Well, you know, we've been getting a lot done for the state of Alaska.
12 different bills. You've passed the most out of any congressman, and you're a freshman.
That's right. So far, we're number one in the House and the Senate in terms of bill passage. And we're just, look.
You're hammering them. You're making everyone look bad.
Well, look, you know what? We've got a backlog of issues that have needed to be addressed for some time. Mm-hmm. And we have a window of opportunity to do it.
How many times have you been Speaker pro tem?
I lost count. Died over the House.
Yes.
And, you know, you get to learn a lot about the procedures and processes and all those things while you're doing it. But
so this is the way I look at it. There's 465 congresspeople. And so that means you've been in session about 300 days. And you've been, other than the speaker itself, probably the majority speaker pro tem.
Well, I don't know. I haven't been keeping track of that.
I have.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, being successful in Washington is about building relationships with people, being able to articulate the case for the, you know, why you're moving particular pieces of legislation, how it impacts your district, or, you know, maybe more importantly, how it impacts other people's districts. And make sure that relative to other priorities that are going on, that you get prioritized. I mean, one of the interesting things that happens in the House is, you know, we number all our bills sequentially, mm-hmm. right, in the order of introduction. And we're getting close to around number 8,000 right now. 8,000. And most bills, the lion's share of bills, will never see any action in committee. The lion's share will never be passed, of course, into law. I think it's something like 3% of bills that get introduced ever get passed into law. And we're fortunate. I've gotten 6 bills out of the Senate. And so we've gotten not just bills out of the House, but we've gotten bills into law.
You know, I so appreciate our founding fathers because they wanted to make it so governance was hard.
That's right.
And, you know, you have 8,000 bills. Just think of 4,000, if 50% rate got approved.
Ah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, there's all kinds of well-intentioned good ideas that can be put forward. But that's why we have a committee process, mm-hmm. right? And so it's not that the Constitution requires, you know, all these committees, but each chamber, the Senate and the House, have made the determination that in order to assure that the bills are being properly vetted, you have these committees and subcommittees, and they have to go through this regular order process before they can get to the floor of one of the chambers. And that has to happen again in the other chamber. And so when you think about the process of passing a bill, it's not just, hey, I introduced this. It's I introduced it. I have to shop it around. I got to get support from committee leadership and committee membership to even hold a hearing on a bill.
You have to work the bill through. Yeah,
it takes a lot of work. And we're fortunate to have a good team of a mix of Alaskans and D.C. veterans that helps to navigate that process.
You know, it's so funny. We've had some local state legislators that they they submit bills, and the news miners always treat it like it's a done deal. Like, oh my God, look at this bill they're submitting, and they never get it to the finish line ever. Yet you've gotten more than anyone in the House or the Senate. Simple as that. And anyway,
yeah. So much of politics is the art of the possible, right?
Yeah.
And it's never it's never the case that that you can work on the most audacious goal all the time, right? Think about it like a football game.
You got to have some singles.
You got to have some, or a baseball game.
Yeah.
Not every time up to the plate is going to be a grand slam.
You're throwing a bomb.
Yeah. So, you know, in the football analogy, you're not going to score a touchdown every time you touch the ball. But if you can move the ball down the field, that's how you ultimately put points on the board. And that's what we try to do for the state of Alaska. When we have chances, like we did in the budget reconciliation bill last year, we utilize that to the maximum available for the state. When it's regular order and it's you know, the daily grind, well, okay, we're looking for some of the smaller wins. But those wins may be small to someone in Texas or California, but they're big for us. So that's what we look to do is whenever we touch the ball, how do we move it down the field?
There you go. You're in the interior. You were here yesterday. You went to the you gave a very good speech at the Lincoln Day dinner. How long are you in the interior, or what have you been doing since you've been in the interior?
Yeah, so we're here predominantly on the official side. You know, I had a morning that was dedicated to familiarizing myself with CTE at UConn Kuskokwim School District.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be talking with the chamber later today about transportation and infrastructure, and particularly about surface transportation reauthorization that's scheduled to come out of the House here later this year, God willing. Look, infrastructure we understand in Alaska is very important. I'm on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, so this is particularly germane to my service in the House. But we're looking at making sure that we have the money for roads, money for bridges, money for ports, all the things that we need here in Alaska. As a young state, we have missed out on a lot of that infrastructure investment, and the infrastructure investment that we do receive has come after the creation of organizations like the EPA, right?
Mm-hmm.
The EPA did not exist when the original highway transportation.
Nixon administration.
That's right. And so, you know, the regulatory regime that grew up, you know, post-statehood, it means that our dollars don't go as far in Alaska as they went in the lower 48 when a lot of that infrastructure money went in the first place.
Yeah, there you go.
So there's a case to be made, and I think it's a compelling case in D.C. We need an outsized share of those transportation and infrastructure dollars in our state because the requirements are higher to deploy that infrastructure money in our state.
There you go. Well, Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. I have Congressman Nick Begich here in the studio with me. If you want to call in to today's show, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And NB3 will be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
So what sets Fairbanks Urology apart? For one, on-site labs with same-day results available for most tests. Are you concerned about your appointment day and time? Want to be seen sooner due to worsening symptoms? Well, just ask. Their dedicated triage team will be sure to coordinate care at a time that best supports you. Fairbanks Urology is dedicated to preventative screening, evaluation, and education. Taking care of yourself starts with just one appointment. Fairbanks Urology, corner of Cushman and Gaffney. Online at fairbanksurology.com.
Optimize your eyes with Mountain View Eye Center, Interior Alaska's choice for state-of-the-art eye care. Find relief with the most advanced dry eye center in the interior. See clearly and be free of your reading glasses and contacts for good. Optimize your eyes with Mountain View Eye Center. Surgeons Dr. Laura Kearsley and Dr. Jason Crossgree specialize in premium cataract surgery, LASIK laser vision correction, and treatment of eye disease. All insurance accepted. Schedule your consultation. Visit mountainvieweyes.com.
Hi, it's Chuck Indereaton, your host for Shooter's Corner, the show dedicated to firearms conversation and education and the shooting sports. You'll be on target for fascinating guests, expert tips, gear reviews, plus thrilling stories. Get the lowdown on local 2A events and more. You won't want to miss a single episode. Join me, Chuck Indereiden, every Thursday morning at 11 for Shooter's Corner, where precision meets passion. Sponsored in part by Rogers Auto Repair. Listen right here on KFAR 660 AM.
Head to Ivory Jack's, right in the heart of the Goldstream Valley. Amazing food, killer cocktails, cold beer, and live entertainment. Enjoy gluten-free Thursdays with gluten-free lasagna. Who knew? Prime rib Fridays, baby back rib Saturdays, and brunch done right on Sundays. Grab a six-pack to go, snag an Ivory Jack's hoodie, and plan to stay way longer than you meant to. Ivory Jack's. Relax, refuel, repeat. Where Fairbanks goes for a good time, and where the parking's always free.
KFAR weather.
Daytime highs approaching 30 this afternoon under mainly clear skies, northerly winds around 5 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies tonight, lows dip down to about 6 below. 27 tomorrow. Partly cloudy and dry Wednesday and Thursday, upper 20s, Wednesday mid 30s by Thursday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Congressman Nick Begich in the studio with me here. Now, Congressman, you know, the House has voted four times to fully fund DHS. And the Senate always tries to not fund specific parts that they... ICE,
yep.
The Coast Guard.
Right,
I mean, they're not
right.
funding the Coast Guard. Immigration, Customs, and, you know.
Right. It's unbelievable. I mean, the House has passed three separate bills. Let me just back up a second. You know, we had an agreement with the Senate, and the Senate had an agreement between the Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats prior to the events in Minnesota. The Democrats decided to use those events as a political tool.
For a political weapon.
Yes, for messaging purposes and so forth. And they backed out of their deal. So the House had already passed the agreed-upon appropriations mm-hmm. bill for Department of Homeland Security. And at the last second, the Democrats said, hey, we can message on this, and blew up that deal. And so ever since then, the House has been continuing to pass DHS appropriations bills.
Mm-hmm.
In accordance with the original agreement, and the Democrat senators over in the Senate have simply dug their heels in and said, we don't care, we're not going to pay these hundreds of thousands of employees at DHS,
mm-hmm.
okay, hundreds of thousands, TSA, Coast Guard, Information Security, Immigration Customs Enforcement, right, Customs and Border Patrol, and held it up because they think it's a political win. Well, these are real families with bills to pay. They got to put food on the table. You know, these people have kids. You know, this is not right what they're doing. And so in the dead of night, 2:22 a.m. last week, the Senate had, I think, five members in the chamber, and they went through a process called hotlining, which is a Senate process where they circulate and say, hey, are there any objections to this? Well, they sent the hotline around at
2 a.m.
Yeah, 2 a.m., 1 a.m. And the staff is asleep, and the members are asleep. And they passed this thing in the dead of night and called it unanimous and sent it over to the House. Well, we all wake up, and we've got a full day scheduled. We've got things going on, and we find out that they sent us this bill. No one had any heads up. Leadership didn't have a heads up. Not even Mike Johnson knew this was coming. And we received this bill, and lo and behold, it defunds the police. It defunds Immigration and Customs Enforcement and a Border Patrol and sets their appropriations at $0 for the fiscal year through September 30th. Well, we're not going to say yes to that. That's absurd. That's absurd. The American people in this last election demanded that we secure the border, and the Senate sending us a bill that says defund the police? No.
Was this through the Senate president?
It was through the Senate majority leader, and he was among the five in the chamber. And this is, again, going back to what we talked about in the previous segment, this is why we have committees.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a hastily drafted bill that was agreed to by a very small group in the Senate and shipped over in the dead of night, and everyone left town thinking, oh, okay, they did their job. Well, we're not going to accept that in the House. We're just not.
I would be admonishing them.
Oh, we are. And I am. It is.
What are you, nuts?
It is nuts. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Why? You look, if you don't have borders, you don't have a country.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally go pull up a map.
You know, people talk about how tough it is for housing now. And you let 20 million people into your country in 4 years, you're going to have a housing problem.
Absolutely. Where do you think all these people are going to live?
Yeah.
They're going to need housing. And here's the thing. The lion's share of those folks are taking the low-income housing end of the market. And they're pushing, you know, people in that end of the market
out.
They're displacing our American citizens.
Yeah.
And we're in a higher interest rate environment than we've been in many years right now. And so building new construction is not an easy thing.
No.
And so we're already seeing that so many of these people are already, now that they're leaving, we've had over 2 million people depart the United States, either voluntarily or through active deportations. Most of those active deportations focused on criminal illegal aliens. And in locations in the United States where that has been overrepresented, that population has been overrepresented, you've seen rents falling.
Mm-hmm.
In many Texas cities, you're seeing rents go down up to 10% year over year. And that is a direct result.
For the reason they went up.
That's right.
Yeah, the inverse is happening.
So, you know, when you talk about the cost of living crisis that it has impacted so much of the country, a lot of it's been driven by the Democrat policies of the previous administration, as you said, mm-hmm. to bring in 20 million people.
Where are you going to put them?
Where are you going to put them? And they're going to, it's not just housing, but it's energy consumption.
Education.
It's the medical.
Hospital.
Medical system. So it strains the existing structure that we have, and it reallocates U.S. tax dollars to a population that in many cases doesn't pay taxes anyway.
So it's a twofer and you're bleeding.
Yes. And so here's the thing. Getting back to what happened this last week in the Senate. The Senate, you know, they left town, they sent us a bill that is obviously a non-starter. What we did was we passed a continuing resolution or a CR,
mm-hmm.
okay? And we said, look, let's get a two-month CR out here that continues the previous fiscal year's budget for another couple months while we talk this out. And we do this all the time in Washington. It's not an uncommon mechanism,
mm-hmm.
right? We pass CRs so that it gives time for people to have the conversation. And in the House, we can get the bill over to the Senate. But the Senate, the only thing they passed was a defund police bill and sent it to us, which we're not going to accept. So we're at an impasse right now, and the Senate's going to have to sort that out.
And here's the thing about it. You know, the border is one thing. You can't stop that. However, with the airports, Fairbanks is not really going to be impacted. Anchorage is really not going to be impacted, to tell you the truth. And you're going to have other major airports during high times that will be impacted.
Well, and you saw the president come out and say, all right, we're going to deploy Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents at airports to relieve some of the pressure for TSA. Now, TSA has some of the highest turnover
mm-hmm.
in any government agency. It's historical reality. And so when you have a defunded status for that department, it makes it extra difficult for them to go out and recruit new people into that department because funding's frozen right now.
Yeah.
So I think that was a great move to help relieve some of the pressure in some of the higher trafficked lower 48 airports. And we've seen the lines reduce almost overnight in those areas where the wait times were in some cases hours long just to get through TSA. And now people are breezing through those same lines in a matter of minutes. But that's an executive action that the president has the authority to take, but it is not a solution to the problem.
It's a short-term cure, not a long-term fix.
That's right.
Your HR House Resolution 6427, the Airport Regulatory Recovery Act of 2025 passed the House. That was your 12th bill.
Yes.
So how did you figure out the Airport Regulatory Relief Act.
Well, you know, here's what.
Usually I'm looking at EPA or the Biden Relief Act is what, you know, well, that was what they did at the very beginning. The Biden Relief Act was overturning 70 different
executive orders.
Yeah.
Yes. So, look, what happens is in a role like this, we're talking to so many different groups. We're talking to transportation groups. We're talking to the state. We're talking to municipalities. We're talking to nonprofits. We're talking to villages and village corporations and ANCs, you name it, right? We're talking to virtually every constituency out there. And so the best ideas don't come from me. They come from the people that are closest to the issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is where a lot of these bills come from. Now, the bill you're talking about, and it's a win for Alaska if we can get it into law. We've gotten it out of the House, so I've done my piece there, but we need to get it through the Senate. But the bill, what it does is it says, look, we've got these standards for rural airports that are essentially the same in many respects.
As LAX.
As LAX. So, yeah. You know, does a small Alaska village need a runway built to an LAX standard? No. And so for rural airports that accommodate aircraft less than 60,000 pounds gross weight, you can supplement the FAA runway standards for your state DOT standards.
Yeah.
And certainly our state DOT standards are going to be a lot different from the FAA. We have fundamentally different terrain up here. And so we reached out to the state and said, is this something that you'd like to see? And they said, absolutely. This would solve some problems for us. We reached out to folks in the aviation community that we know, and they were very supportive. And we said, hey, this bill makes sense. So when you hear, hey, you pass all these bills, a lot of folks will say, well, we don't need more laws. I agree. Right? We're looking for deregulatory opportunities that make sense.
Can you put a rider in there and give Rob Everts his license, you know, his 121 license until he's 70?
Used to be,
Rob, I'm thinking of you, buddy.
Yeah, used to be 60 and you were retired.
Yeah, now it's 65. Yeah.
Yeah.
But who's to say he's 65?
You know,
maybe he identifies as a 30-year-old.
Biological age.
Yeah,
is just
yeah.
A number, right?
My goodness.
Yeah.
Now you in earlier this month you were in Juneau, the state capitol, and you give your annual address, and sadly, there was a Democrat down there in the front row, who has not been admonished for his no ice sign showing you, and it seems like that side of the aisle does not want to address such a faux pas.
Well, let me tell
you're a very beloved, you're becoming a very beloved elected official for the state of Alaska, and that was complete disrespect.
I felt like it was disrespectful. I mean, look, you know, this is the kind of antics that we see in Washington, quite frankly. I mean, I've been at the joint address to Congress and the State of the Union, right, where the president has come in and delivered his remarks to jeering from the other side of the aisle to
looks like
signage. And
looks like the House of Commons.
Right, yeah. We do things differently over here, folks. But it's sort of a copycat, sort of copy-paste mentality that you see this now showing up in Juneau. And this particular legislator, who happens to be from Virginia, so I guess it's pretty close to D.C., wrote this out on his steno pad and held it up in front of my face as I'm talking. And of course, I ignored him and kept going. But, you know, that's nonsense. We don't need to see that here. If you've got an argument, make it. If you've got a question, ask it. But instead, he chose to interrupt the speech with his own personal message. So
that's a person from Anchorage.
Yeah, well, currently.
Yeah. When, you know, you travel through a very, very big state. Where's next?
You know, we're going to be in Anchorage. We're going to be in the Valley. We just came back from a Southeast trip and had a great time in Wrangell and in Petersburg and in Ketchikan and, of course, Juneau, as you mentioned. And we were down in that area, and we love to see the smaller communities too.
Mm-hmm.
Big communities like Fairbanks, North Pole are important. We don't want to ever say that they're not. They are, absolutely. This is a critical hub. But the villages and the smaller towns are important as well, because that's where a lot of the resources of our state are also, and we can't forget about them.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We're going to have some Prince bumper music. We're going to have some Fox News, state news, commercials, and weather. And when we come back, we're going to discuss the congressman's accessorizing to the color of our purple padded room with his sweater and shirt. I'm sure you all want to hear. We'll be back.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The U.S. preparing to deploy thousands more soldiers to the Middle East. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt.
Iran's ballistic missile and drone attacks are down by roughly 90%. The United States is also decimating the Iranian regime's navy. We have destroyed more than 150 of their naval vessels so far, including 92% of their largest vessels.
A Fox poll released last week found 58% of American voters are opposed to this war with Iran. The government's still partially shut down, although the president signed an emergency order to pay TSA agents. Democratic Delaware Senator Chris Coons says Democrats would not approve of funding for ICE and Customs and Border Protection without reforms.
We want reforms to how ICE and Border Patrol are conducting immigration enforcement actions, and we've negotiated about that.
America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Alaska's news source reports a man has died after he was pulled out of a recent avalanche near Lake George, which is near Colony Glacier, according to Alaska State Troopers. Eric Summers, 63, of California, was pronounced dead at an Anchorage area hospital, troopers said. Silverton Mountain Guides, which was leading the heli-skiing trip, sent a statement about the avalanche. It said around 2 p.m. Friday, the group, which included three experienced skiers, was on a run about a mile east of Lake George that had been skied several times that day. After a guide made it to the bottom of the run, one of the skiers then proceeded down. At about the halfway point, the guest remotely triggered a slide. He was unable to avoid the slide and was caught up in the debris, the statement continued. It said the skier was also not able to deploy his avalanche airbag, but because of his beacon, he was found quickly. The guides and the other skiers took immediate action to locate the buried skier, Silverton Mountain Guide said. Efforts to dig him out began promptly. Once the skier's head was uncovered, life-saving measures began immediately.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
I'm a goose watcher. I'm a goose watcher. Watching those geese drop by. My, my, my. I'm a goose watcher. I'm a goose watcher. Here comes one now.
Springtime is Goose Watch time, and that means you can win $500 in cash for the guess of when the geese return to Kramer's Field, courtesy of Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware. Enter your guess when the first flock of Canada geese arrives. It's Goose Watch 2026 at Frontier Outfitters in Govora Mall and Century Hardware in the North Pole Plaza Mall. If your guess is the closest to the official time and day, you win $500. Visit KFARradio.com or the store for details. Must be 18 or older. Be a goose watcher and win $500 in cash.
I'm a goose watcher. I'm a goose watcher. Here comes one now.
Slip into the brand new Bridgestone Dueler ATSN all-terrain tire from GCR. Elevate your year-round driving experience. Bridgestone Dueler ATSN delivers uncompromising traction through snow, ice, water, and gravel. Whatever Alaska's roads throw your way, the Bridgestone Dueler ATSN is designed to dominate off-road performance on your light truck, SUV, and CUV while offering a remarkably quiet ride for your everyday driving. Buyers and service, the Tire Guys. Taming the Alaskan Road, Van Horn at Cushman.
Dr. Kim Driftmeyer again. Board certified and fellowship trained spine surgeon here at McKinley, where we have all the services needed to keep your back, neck, and spine in good health. X-rays and MRI to help answer those questions about why your back might be feeling the way it does, physical therapy, OMM with Drs. Wright and Malcolm, and even spine injections and surgeries right here under one roof at McKinley. The majority of our patients get treated without the need for surgery, and for those that do need surgery, you can take care of it right here in your hometown. So if your back or neck are bothering you, come see me and the spine team here at McKinley Orthopedics, Sports Medicine, and Spine. Open every day but Sunday.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. David Prues in the studio here, and I also have his chief of staff, state of Alaska, Leslie Hajdukovich. Leslie, how you doing? Say hello to the world.
Good morning.
And don't give me that eye where you're going to kick my backside, because you know how I like pissing you off, especially in the morning. So you've been busy. What are you looking at in the future?
Well, I'll tell you, we're not done with the 12 bills we've gotten out of the House. We've got a number of other objectives that we're working on. Some of those things are currently bills that have been introduced, and others that we're continuing to draft.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you know, there's still an issue with respect to fisheries abundance.
Yes.
And we all know that we're in a period of scarcity right now, and we need to make sure that that's not permanent. Right, we rely on fish in Alaska. We've got fishing is a big part of our economy. We've got our commercial fishing sector, which breaks down into all kinds of different gear types. Right,
mm-hmm.
We've got folks that are longliners and set netters, seiners, you name it. Right, and so we've got a robust small commercial fishing sector in Alaska. We've got sport fishing. We've got rural subsistence, which is a lifeline.
That should be priority.
That should be priority. And,
yep.
And here's the thing. We also, and I break it down into two subgroups of subsistence. We got rural, but we got urban subsistence too.
Yeah.
And this supplements people's food source, and it upgrades their protein.
And it's also a nice living style that they can continue.
That's right. And so, you know, fisheries abundance is very important for Alaskans.
The reason I brought up the other person in the studio here is because, you know, September 1, I know where she's at, and she's in a duck blind, and she's getting food for the family.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way it is.
Well, you know, we hunt and fish. It's part of why many people move to Alaska in the first place or live in Alaska. And, you know, with the cost of living in Alaska, it's an important supplement to going to the grocery store, whether you live in a village or whether you live in an urban environment. And so we're working on bills that will help to address that. We're looking at changing the composition of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, and I'm mm-hmm. working on a bill for that to make sure that there's always at least one voice from each of those user groups that are present. Because if you've got one particular group, as we do right now with the trawlers, that
dominates,
are overrepresented
yeah.
on the council, it can diminish the opportunity for other perspectives to come in. And the council was constructed to represent the people.
Yeah.
Right? And the various user groups.
Not the commercial activities out of Seattle.
Right. The large trawl yeah. commercial activities. So we want to make sure that the council representation is reflective of the user groups in the state of Alaska. And so that's what my bill is aiming to do. We will be introducing it soon. And I'm sure we'll get plenty of feedback, which is great. We welcome the feedback. But that's one of the things that I think we can get done. Now, one of the things we can also do, and I mentioned this to my address to the legislature, is that the legislature, I believe, can pass their own legislation to bind the hands of any governor in saying, hey, when you advance people to the Secretary of Commerce for appointment to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, mm-hmm. they must meet these criteria. Currently, there are no criteria that are spelled out in state law. And so the legislature could do that on their own. And we have this is what's really important. We have the majority as Alaskans. The majority of the council seats. There's 11 council seats. We get 6 appointees.
Mm-hmm.
So if the legislature passed this legislation that I'm referring to in Juneau, they could basically control the council's direction, which
yeah.
changes the entire fisheries management policy for federal activity. So in any case, these are some of the things we're working on. That's not the only things we're working on with respect to fisheries. I've been having a lot of conversations with folks about some of the technology that's out there. They call it moist air incubation.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the life cycle of a salmon, right, that life cycle of salmon, the most, let's say, lethal portion of that life cycle is at the very beginning, those fertilized eggs. And so moist air incubation sort of allows you to skip that step in river.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a hatchery. Right, and it's a much smaller footprint. It's a little easier, significantly easier to maintain, lower cost, maintain genetic stock,
higher rate of survival.
Higher rate of survival past that early stage, And
they might not end up in a pike's mouth.
That's right. Exactly.
Sorry for that grotesque statement, Fairbanks.
You know, but the point is, we've got to focus. If we're trying to restore abundance, we've got to do two things. We've got to reduce the pressure in the fisheries by fishing practices that are not congruent with a prosperous fishery. And we also need to make sure that we're increasing the availability of stocks. Otherwise, in some of these river systems, it may take decades for them to recover without some intervention. So I think it's going to be a little bit of both that we're going to have to implement. But I think there's an opportunity for us to turn the corner. So that's part of what we're working on. Of course, I mentioned this in my address to the legislature. We just introduced a bill to make the PFD tax-free. I've always thought it was strange.
Hey, tips are tax-free now.
Tips are tax-free.
Yeah.
You know, consider this a tip from your state government.
Overtime is tax-free.
But the truth is, this is our revenue share.
And it is a diminishing revenue share.
Now, sadly, it is. It's a diminishing revenue share, but it's supposed to be a permanent fund.
Yeah.
A permanent fund dividend. And so we want to preserve that, and we want to maximize it. And I can do two things in D.C. So I'm not in the state legislature. But from D.C., I can increase the amount of resource development opportunities for the state to help fill up that permanent fund, which ultimately results in higher PFD payments, right? I can do that, and we have done that by opening up NPRA and other areas of the state, the 1002 area, for lease sales, et cetera. So that's being done. But we can also make sure that you can keep more of that dividend payment, and that's what that bill is attempting to do. And does it have a great chance of passage? We'll see. There are some things that you would have thought we'd never be able to get done, and yet we leased 30 million acres through the budget reconciliation bill last year. That legislative text began in my office. It was introduced in the House Resources Committee, and it became law.
Yeah.
And so you can do things on certain must-pass legislation that stand alone might be very difficult to get done, but we have a bill for it. It's out there. Hopefully, there'll be another opportunity for us to attach it, and maybe we'll be able to make that happen as well.
Okay. What were some of the other items that you brought up to your address to Juno before you were interrupted? Sign waving people who are out to lunch from Virginia but reside in Anchorage and are elected out of Anchorage.
You know, I think one of the things that we have come to appreciate is just how important it is, getting back a little bit to what we achieved in the budget reconciliation bill, to make sure people across the United States Congress understand just how important Alaska is for them. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I talked about many times on Problem Corner before I was elected, but we are delivering on that promise. People around the country are realizing we have the critical minerals that we need. We have the energy resources that the nation needs. And when they invest in Alaska, it provides greater security for the United States. At the end of the day, what we recognize is that we have sent our manufacturing base outside of the state of Alaska, outside of the United States even, outside of even friends of ours that are located close to us. They've gone to places like China, adversaries. And so we've got to restore domestic production again. And the way you do that is you have to start with the raw materials, and we have the raw materials for the rest of the nation.
Fairbanks, I know we're going to go to a commercial break, but I know you've been waiting with bated breath in regards to the description of Congressman Begich's clothing that I'm going to replace the term accessorizing with.
Accessorizing?
I'm
not walking in here with a purple jacket.
I know. It compliments. It's very nice. It's very pristine. It compliments. He did not accessorize to come here. He complimented when he came here. And we'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
It has occurred to me that I am an introvert. I live a sheltered life as an old septic tank, gazing at the stars, pondering my poetry, appreciating the weather, rain or snow. I know my family has Bigfoot Pumpin' and Thawin' faithfully pump me out once a year. I count on that flow in my life, and I will continue to serve them much better for many years to come.
Fairbanks began in 1904, and it started at Sampson Hardware. When you're starting a project, start at Sampson Hardware. You've been all over town, and no one else has this wide of selection of tools, fasteners, plumbing gear, heating parts, lawn and garden supplies, and cabin-ready housewares. From paint mixing to bush orders and custom solutions, Sampson's Alaska expertise makes your job easier. Stop by 1990 Phillips Field Road and see why generations of builders and DIYers begin and finish right at Sampson Hardware.
Across Alaska's rivers, runways, trap lines, and trails, there are stories that deserve to be heard. Those stories live on Alaska Tracks. Hosted by wildlife biologist and lifelong outdoorsman Randy Zarnke, Alaska Tracks takes you inside the lives of the people who know this land best. Elders, hunters, bush pilots, and trappers who carry Alaska's traditions forward. Built on an oral history project by the Alaska Trappers Association, each episode blends conversation, storytelling, and first-hand experience, connecting generations, bush and city, past and present. This isn't just a show. It's a living archive and a reminder of what it means to live in the last frontier. Alaska Tracks is proudly presented by KFAR Radio and sponsored by Rod's Saw Shop, Ginger Orem with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Frontier Outfitters. Alaska Tracks, Saturday at 1:30 p.m., only on KFAR Radio. Stories of the North, told by the people who live them.
KFAR Weather.
Mainly clear skies today with daytime highs approaching 30. Winds out of the northeast around 5 miles per hour. Lows dip down to about 6 below. Tonight, partly cloudy skies. High temperatures reach up to 27. Tomorrow, mainly cloudy skies expected. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back in the studio here with Congressman Nick Begich. Nick, how you doing, sir?
I'm great. Having a good time. Thanks for having me on.
How can you not have a good time without not... You're on KFAR. Come on.
How could one not? You know, it's always great to be back in Fairbanks. You guys have had a heck of a winter.
Yes, we have.
This has been rough. Yeah. I mean, spring can't come fast enough.
There's got to be some fund for, you know, reconciliation for us inhabitants of the interior for what we've been through.
Where's global warming when you need it? You know?
Lies.
Yeah.
Lies.
I mean, when it's minus 40, it's hard to believe Al Gore. But
at the same time, you know, that's what makes Fairbanks Fairbanks. You are in Fairbanks, Alaska in the winter.
Yeah.
And this is what can happen. These are the consequences of living here. And a person was reminding me of the 70s when I, you know, during the pipeline, that there was this bumper sticker on tailgate. And it says, ducks fly south for the winter. So should we.
A lot of people did this winter. I suspect for folks that could get out, they checked out for a couple of weeks. But, you know, it's going to be a heck of a breakup around here. I was staying over at Pike's, and there's mountains of snow.
You know, it's interesting. I must say that the federal government, when we have a disaster such as the Southwest Alaska hurricane that came in, the federal, not funding, but apparatus that stepped in to help relocation, education. And I was just thinking the other day, the Yukon River is going to have some flooding.
Yep.
Just with the amount of ice, the bottlenecks that'll happen. And I'm glad you're where you are at. I really am.
Well, you know, and what's so unfortunate as we learned through this disaster that struck southwestern Alaska is that in many of these locations, or at least some of these locations, the government either encouraged or required the village location town sites to be in a particular spot. Mm-hmm. And in some of those spots, they're relatively low-lying, and these folks were destined to have
This issue. Yeah.
And, you know, the two most affected villages have come to the determination that they want to relocate. And we're going to have to go to work here later this year and try to find resources to assist in the relocation, yeah. particularly when it was the federal government themselves that said, you will have your village in this location. They're asking for town sites that have, higher elevation, obviously. And when you think about, put yourself in their shoes, if you can, right? When you think about what you would tell your kids or your grandkids, hey, we're going to go back. Boy, they went through some really traumatic experiences.
Yeah.
And no one wants to live like that. No one wants to live in fear that this is going to happen again. So we need to do our best to put them in a position so that it doesn't happen again.
And Fairbanks went through that, with our 67 flood. I mean, we went through that. And, the federal government stepped in with the Chena Flood Control Project. But our house was decimated. Our family, my brothers and sister, my mom, we were refugees. We traveled the country for 9 months before we came back. And when I got back, my whole subdivision, all my friends, most of them were gone. They didn't come back.
Wow.
So relocation.
Yeah.
So just think of an entire village, been through it, didn't realize it at the time, but you reflect upon it. Entire villages. It happened to them.
Yep.
It happened to us.
That's right. Yeah. And, this is why we have FEMA.
Yeah.
Right? Federal Emergency Management.
Mm-hmm.
They come in and they assist with things like this that happen, these disasters that occur around the country. And they did a fantastic job in coordination with the state to make sure that, and the Red Cross and so many other organizations around the state, to help those folks evacuate and, land in a safe location in Anchorage. And it's not without its challenges. We know that the displacement is highly disruptive to families. You're taking people that live in a very rural setting, and then they're in a large city, and it's a culture shock for a lot of folks. Now we have folks in Anchorage, some here in Fairbanks, some in Bethel or other parts of the state, and they're trying to get their lives back together. And this is where the federal government has the resources to be able to come in and assist, and we'll be working on that later this year.
Good to hear. It gets interesting when something like that happens, and you can see how the wheels of government can get going to help versus stall, obstruct. There's some tools
when government decides to act, they can move quickly, and that's what FEMA is designed to do. Now, I will say one of the challenges is going to be for these regions, for the villages in these regions. The construction season, as we all know, is not 365.
So there are June windows. Through September.
That's right. There are windows, and so this is not going to be solved overnight. Mm-mm. Unfortunately, it's not something that people can
two construction seasons.
That's right. It's going to take time because you've got to select the site, you've got to plan it all out, you've got to get approvals, you've got to find the money and the investment to go in and start rebuilding, and then you have to wait for those construction windows in order to get it done. So it's going to take some time.
And here I go back to the DHS funding and the Coast Guard. Now, you and our congressional contingent has worked very hard for the Coast Guard expansion and going into Nome.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, look, Coast Guard is critical. That the port of Nome is very important. And we see the Russians and the Chinese now starting to work together as they're, I'm going to use my air quotes here in the studio, exploring the seafloor. In concert with one another,
mm-hmm.
Up and down our coastline. And so it is important for us to make sure that we have access to the Arctic. That's part of the budget reconciliation bill that passed last year. We put $26 billion into the Coast Guard, a historic, by any measure, historic amount of investment to support Arctic cutters, icebreakers. There's 16 icebreakers that are intended to be funded from that out of that $26 billion, including, home porting funds. And so we just had an approval for the Storrs down in Juneau to be home ported there. That's a $300 million appropriation, but there's going to be a whole lot more coming to the state of Alaska. And look, it makes sense to put the icebreakers where the ice is.
You think so?
One would think, right? So why should these icebreakers be home ported in places like Portland and Seattle? We need them up here. And so there's a lot of interest and effort being put in to making sure that we have the facilities to home port cutters and icebreakers here in the state of Alaska. And that comes with you know, challenges. We've got to make sure we've got the housing and the infrastructure to support these families, but that'll be good for the community as a whole when we welcome these Coast Guard service members and their families to Alaska. They do a tremendous job for us, not just in patrolling our maritime border in Alaska, but also making sure that our fisheries and our fishermen are safe when they're out there conducting those activities. They are our search and rescue operation.
They're not doing drug interdiction out there.
Not much. No. I'm not going to say
but
none.
Search but and rescue, yeah. You know, that is the hardest fishing location in the world.
That's right. That's right.
In the world.
Yeah. Bering Sea is tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, for our fishermen and the families that rely on them, you know, they need to understand that and know that they're going to have a lifeline, that they'll have protectors, safety, right, out there. And our Coast Guard provides that.
And also the fish poaching interdiction from the two countries you just described.
And that's a huge issue.
Yeah.
And it's a huge issue not just in Alaska but all over the world. You see these Chinese fishing fleets that park right off
your coast.
Our coast, nations in South America and off of the coast of Africa, where they're right outside that line in international waters, and they just
reap.
They just take everything indiscriminately. And we have some pretty strong laws here in the United States with respect to fisheries management, but the Chinese, when they're operating in international waters, are violating all kinds of international norms, decimating fisheries all over the world. And Coast Guard is the way that we at least can keep them out of our waters.
True. We got about 3 minutes left, sir. How do you want to conclude our wonderful show?
Well, look, it's an honor to do this job for Alaskans. You know, as everybody, I think, at this point realizes, we only have one voice in the House. We just get one. And there's 435 members of the House, plus the territories. And so my job is to be your advocate in Washington. I go down to D.C. and I tell Alaska's story. And I tell that story about our resources. I tell that story about our beauty. I tell that story about what we can be for the rest of the United States. And I think, you know, to the extent that I'm able, we are moving legislation forward for the state of Alaska. We mentioned a couple of times in the show, 12 bills out of the House, 6 bills passed the Senate. We're getting historic things done for Alaska, and that doesn't even include what we included in the budget reconciliation bill, which was transformational for our state and will be for the next generation or two, opening up NPRA, opening up the 1002 area of Anwar, which has been a goal for decades in Alaska, and making sure that those are durable, right? It's one thing to say we're going to have these leases, and you may be listening and saying to yourself, yeah, but the next administration is just going to revoke it. Well, what we did helps make these leases durable.
Yeah.
We put Congressional Review Act, CRAs, in place, right, that prevent a future president from taking the same actions or similar actions.
That Biden did
without congressional approval. Well, we're seeing right now how hard it is to get 60 votes in the Senate, but if they want to do what they did to us in the future, they're going to have to find 60 votes in the Senate. It provides the durability that we need to attract investment into our state. And we just saw that with the most successful lease sale in the National Petroleum Reserve in history.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought back Exxon, and we brought back Shell.
It always gets me. NPRA, National
Petroleum Reserve. Yeah.
A.
A, Alaska.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not B, A.
And here's the thing. The NPRA was set aside for the express intent and purpose of oil and gas development.
Yeah.
For nearly 100 years. That's what it's been. And Biden, not only did he drain our strategic petroleum reserve, but he decided that he was going to lock up
Everything else. Yeah.
And look.
Couldn't transport it.
That's right.
Couldn't drill. Couldn't explore.
That's right. And so we've revoked that regime of regulations. We've put durability in play, and investment is returning to the state of Alaska, and it's going to do great things for us.
Congressman, really appreciate a couple things. Appreciate your time coming in, visiting Alaska, visiting Fairbanks, and really appreciate everything you do for the state of Alaska. You're a very busy man, got a great family. There's many locations you could be putting your time and effort in, and I think Alaska and Fairbanks especially is very fortunate to have what you do for us. Thank you so much. Fairbanks, that is our show. You have a great day, and I will see you tomorrow.